This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio. Get us at apologiaradio.com. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the same-sex marriage debate. This is church, a gospel issue. We have to be salt. We must be light on this issue of same-sex marriage.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio. I urge you guys to pray for the homosexual community, then log on to realharmony.org to equip yourselves with the resources we've provided.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The same-sex attracted community has a symbol that's universally recognized. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that represents true, harmonious, biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org and buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy them by the truckloads. Help us redeem the culture. And let me reiterate, this is not a political issue only. This is a gospel issue. Realharmony.org.
Non-rockabotus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Delusional is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt.
She hung up on me.
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
When we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
Take an amazing journey to a place that will blow your mind and move your heart so you will never be the same again.
What's up, y'all? This is Apologia Radio. If you don't know it, get us at apologiaradio.com. If you haven't done so yet, go to iTunes, get your subscription of Apologia Radio. You can get all the past episodes for free. Be sure to, when you go to apologiaradio.com, as you pray for us, as you're led to give, please give. But also, please pick up some of the past episodes and share them across your social media. And if you haven't also done so, go to Apologia Radio's Facebook page, like the page, and you can interact with Apologia Radio and other fans from across the world at Apologia Radio on our Facebook page. In the studio today, coming at you from Phoenix, Arizona, which is perfect.
Yes.
Perfect. This is why we live here right now.
Yes.
This is the time of year where you're like, now I remember why it is that I actually came here. Now, you were actually brought forth.
Yeah.
In Arizona. And you were brought forth in Arizona, correct?
Since the beginning.
Your Genesis was here.
Here.
In the desert. Now, Luke and I, not so much.
Nope.
Not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much.
Yep.
You were from originally.
You were born in the desert, though, too.
Was I? I was from Vegas. Yeah, but
was I?
No, but it was only like a moment. It was like, you know, just sort of like, hey, how you doing? And we moved.
It was but a moment in time.
Hey, how you doing, Vegas? And we left.
Yeah, I was born in.
I didn't miss much.
I was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah.
I lived a lot in the cold.
Yeah.
My dad texted me yesterday and he's like, we're getting 10 more inches. They already got 3 feet of snow this year.
Yeah. You know, Luke's from that part of the country too, because we went on a little church tour out there, preaching tour. He was driving.
Glory.
Glory. He was driving in the snow, like 75 miles per hour, like in just on snow on the freeway.
This is such an exaggeration.
Yeah, and he drives with both feet too. Just so everyone knows. Okay.
I think we've covered
always.
That.
I know. Just so you know, right foot gas, left foot brake. That's weird. In the snow. You ever seen those? You ever see like the old videos? The videos. I guess like in Russia, you have to like have like cameras on your car, which is actually kind of a good idea. Like they can record like
who's really like, responsible for an accident. It's kind of cool. Like,
that makes sense.
Like, I guess like everyone in Russia has like these cameras or something, because like there's all these videos online. And here's the thing,
yeah,
it scares
me. I have seen a lot of
from
just
Russia.
Like random footage. It's like, how did you...
And if you listen to if you listen to them talking, you hear like they're, you know, the Russian...
There'd be a lot of me picking
You can
my
hear
nose.
The Russianese. The Russianese.
Yeah, I don't know if I want that.
Yeah.
I would never be able to sing in my car again.
Well, it's interesting because, like, you see all these videos, these people, like, in Russia, like, getting in accidents. Or you see guys, like, getting out of the car and, like, having road rage and fighting each other. So you see the whole fight take place in front of the car sort of thing. Anyway, like, here's what scares me about it. Like, riding with Luke, like, 75 miles per hour, like, on snow, fresh snowstorm. He's over there shaking his head. It's true, and you know it. You know it's true. Is you watch these videos, like, in Russia, and they're riding in the snow. And, like, this family's, la-di-da, like, da-da-da-da-da, it's a beautiful day, da-da-da-da-da.
And all of a sudden, Russia.
All of a sudden, like, because they're driving 75 miles per hour in the snow, probably with both feet as well, and all of a sudden, and they go off into a truck that's oncoming, like, 80 miles per hour. And all you see is, like, ah, and it's done. And that's what I think about when I ride with Luke in the snow. I think about, he's like, just calm down. Calm down. It's all, and all of a sudden, we're going to come oncoming truck and a Mack truck. I'm going to turn into like a pancake.
First of all, that one time it happened, we were on a divided highway, so we weren't going to be flying into any oncoming traffic.
And he's always like, just relax, relax, relax.
You should see.
I'm like, I heard the Russian guy.
Just like
I heard the Russian guy saying that. He was like, honey, relax, relax.
He sounded like a mobster.
Russian mobster.
Here's the thing, if you ever want to see Jeff cry like a little girl, do some donuts in the snow or some fish tailing, and he might pee his pants.
Yeah, it's true. This is true.
I learned how to drive in the snow. I can handle it. I know how it works.
Because yeah,
it's fine.
It was both.
It's not an issue.
Oh, I love Jeremy. This is why we love having Jeremy as a tech.
Yeah. Well, anyways, thanks, J-Man.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So, hey.
So, Jeff's a wuss is the moral of the story.
Moral of the story. This is true.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, we've been doing a lot of shows lately. We had Dr. Sarfati on last week. If you didn't check that out, we did a review of the Ken Ham Bill Nye debate. You guys, a lot of you guys know that Creation Ministries International, my favorite creation sort of science ministry. Go there, getthemcreation.com. Pick up that last episode. It was really helpful. We had about 30,000 some odd hits last week on the Facebook for the episode. So, I mean, it was excellent. Okay, so we've been doing a lot of episodes. Recently, if you haven't listened to them, on apologetics, presuppositional apologetics, how do we defend the faith. We've done a lot of stuff on worldview issues, confronting the culture with the gospel, a lot of shows on abortion. If you haven't heard yet, we did some shows with those from the people from American Vision, Joel McDermott, Gary DeMar, specifically on Matthew 24, things like the Great Tribulation. Excellent resources. I really want to encourage you guys to go get those. But one thing you don't know is over the last few months, Luke and Joy and I have been working hard on getting someone specific on the show that we've been very, very excited about, and it has been difficult because he's such a busy man, and so just things weren't catching, and we weren't able to actually snag him in the show. But guess what? Today, finally, super excited about this. We have the guest we wanted to have on for a long time because we think it will really benefit you guys as our listeners and us as well. I'll tell you about our guest, and I'll bring him in. It's Dr. George Grant. Dr. George Grant is the head of the King's Meadow Study Center. And let me let you know a little bit about the King's Meadow Study Center by way of my own introduction to them. My kids are all homeschooled, and my son Sage is 14 years old, and Sage is actually doing Dr. Grant's curriculum, and it is astonishing to see the love my son has for Dr. Grant and for the lectures and for the study. I'll give you an example of what it looks like. My son Sage is 14 years old. How many 14-year-olds do this? My son Sage will say, I'm going to my room for a couple hours, and he'll literally disappear in his room for hours at a time, listening and re-listening to lectures from Dr. George Grant. Dr. George Grant, again, King's Meadow Study Center, it was established in 1991 by Dr. Grant to help Christians develop a cultural expression of the Protestant and Reformed Christian worldview. Listen to this. In art, music, literature, politics, social research, community development, and education. Dr. Grant, welcome to the show, brother.
be with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. It is truly an honor, and we consider it a high privilege to have you on today, brother. And again, guys, we're here with Luke the Bear, Enjoy the Girl, and me, Jeff the Ninja.
Nope.
I'm forcing it.
Nope. You're trying to force it, but it's not going to work.
Dr. Grant, where do we even begin? I've been thinking about this for months now, and I got to tell you something funny, Dr. Grant. We were supposed to have you on, I think, in December or January initially, and it was funny because I got a call from your assistant, and she's like, "Oh, he had an emergency. He had to go like to Holland or something."
Yeah. Well, actually, I was on my way to Indonesia. I think I was in Holland at the time.
Oh, okay.
I was meeting with some. It's a really fascinating story. Kurdistan is the northern part of Iraq that is not Arab. The Kurds are of a different racial and historical background. They are Islamic, but they have been persecuted by their Islamic neighbors for centuries. And I always think that some of the best missions strategies are to look for those wedge places in the world where there's already a kind of a natural opportunity to bring the gospel. At any rate, persecuted by Saddam Hussein, persecuted by the Turks, the Syrians, the Iranians that surround their country, they were just really primed for the gospel back during the first Gulf War. And some churches were planted. I was given an opportunity to be a part of that. And in the end, we wound up establishing a number of classical Christian schools, teaching a biblical worldview using my curriculum and lots of other really good curriculum. And at any rate, there are now Kurds that are scattering around the world. A lot of expat Kurds are in Norway, in Holland, in Germany. So I was actually meeting with Kurdish church planters in the Netherlands, looking to have an impact on the Middle East by having an impact on the expat community. Just really,
that's awesome,
fascinating turn of God's providence that He's allowing us to sort of do these kinds of really unique things.
Well, that's what I was so we were laughing when we got word, like, hey, well, we'll take what we can get, so whatever we can get him. And it's funny because, you know, the usual excuse is like, oh, I'm sick or whatever. It's like, no, he's like, you know, in Indonesia and in Holland, he's busy out there doing stuff. I was like, you know, I was like, oh, that's like me last week. Yeah, I get it. I just think it's exciting because it just goes to show just the impact of your ministry and your study center and what you're doing. Okay, we're coming into a commercial break in a moment here. But I want to sort of give everyone an opportunity to know where to go to get your stuff. So I'm going to send everyone to kingsmeadow.com, kingsmeadow.com. And let me tell you, again, as we go to the commercial break, I want to let you know sort of how I see Dr. Grant so helpful. Dr. Grant, not only is his study center just rigorous, I mean, the material is intense. Let me encourage the adults who are out of school, out of college, go anyways, pick up materials, whether it be for kids in Christian education, homeschool, or not. Get these materials for yourself. They are worth their weight in gold. I mean, absolutely stunning, some of this stuff. So I want to encourage you guys to go there. And it's essential to see Dr. Grant's going to help us a lot with history, maybe some corrections on our own history, what we've learned, and the issues of worldview. And this is why I appreciate Dr. Grant so much. The issue of worldview that comes up so much is something that Dr. Grant deals with in his studies. KingsMeadow.com, ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
I've appreciated, Joy and Luke, is that when you're listening to Dr. Grant and his lectures, you're not just, and this is one of the problems I have with public school education, obviously, but aside the immorality of the system and the twisted worldview, all those different things, is just the fact that education today can tend to be a memorization of facts, mm-hmm. and those facts are filtered, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those facts are filtered through somebody else's mind and worldview.
Yeah.
And so you look at education today and you say, like, how are we producing people with such a warped worldview, and they're just not thinking? Like, we're not taught to think anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because atheists usually liken the whole translation of the Bible process to, like, sort of a telephone game. Actually, didn't Bill Nye do that?
Bill Nye did that.
Yeah, he did.
But actually, history, I feel like, is more of a telephone game. I feel like you hear it and then you tell somebody else. You're just kind of saying what you hear.
It's a memorization of facts. You're not taught to think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just passed down to you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and here's what I was saying I appreciate about Dr. Grant and the curriculum at King's Meadow. You're not just learning facts. You're learning the details, the worldview, and thinking process behind. So a lot of the why questions are actually answered. Mm. And you don't necessarily, you're not getting that in education today. Public school education, you're not getting it. You're getting a fact. You're not learning the why. What was the worldview? What were they thinking? What was beneath them? What was at their feet?
Mm-hmm.
Why were they responding to this thing in that way? Dr. Grant, can you talk to us about that? I guess talk to us about the necessity of worldview and background and this whole thinking process. I mean, I want you to help us to understand why it's so important for us to get this right.
Well, there's several things about history. I think you're absolutely right. I think the fun game analogy is a great one. History is not what happened. History is what we remember that happened.
Okay. Mm.
And as a result, history is colored by the perspective, the angle. I recall this incredible clip years and years ago in the Francis Schaeffer film, How Should We Then Live, where he talks about the Democratic National Convention of 1968. There were these huge riots. It was people thought the world, the nation at least, was just literally coming apart. It was a very difficult time in our nation's history. And there were two TV stations in Chicago covering the events. One was very, very conservative. The other was very, very liberal. And so the news coverage was radically different. On the liberal station, you had these riot police who were just beating on innocent college kids. They're just out there trying to express their First Amendment rights. They're trying to be a part of the political process. And here are these brutal police just wailing on them. The conservative station, on the other hand, had these poor policemen backed into a corner by these reviling hippies, throwing awful things, bags full of blood and razor blades stuck into apples, and here's the world coming apart by these unwashed masses. It was the exact same event, just different camera angles, just different worldview perspectives. That's a great perspective of sort of a news event, and of course all of us can recognize media bias. All you have to do is watch 15 minutes of CNN and then flip it over and watch 15 minutes of Fox, and you think to yourself, okay, I want neither one of these perspectives. They both got to be wrong.
Right.
But we oftentimes don't apply that same sort of discernment grid to all of the rest of history. Look, the Crusades are just like the Chicago Democratic National Convention of 1968. It depends upon which TV station is shooting the footage from which corner that will determine what you think about it.
That's an excellent, excellent picture. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about, maybe by way of getting our way into this, in historical stuff that we learn, many of us trained in the modern American public school education system, or we're just in the culture and we're catching stuff. We're catching it. You brought up the issue of the Crusades. Let's just zero in there for a moment. When you bring that up as an example, that look, we need to have a perspective that sees that there are different sides speaking about this issue. Talk to us about the Crusades, because one of the things that, say, atheists will bring up to Christians at times when we sort of bring the gospel to them is to bring up the issue of the immorality of the Bible, the immorality of Christians in history. And they'll bring up the issue of the Crusades. Mm-hmm. Now, from my perspective, the first thing I want to do is go at their feet and say, well, you don't have a problem of evil in your worldview. All you have is bags of protoplasm. Who cares what protoplasm does to protoplasm?
Exactly.
Ultimately, and so it's not a problem of evil in my worldview. It's a problem of good in your worldview. What's good?
Exactly.
What's evil? Anything. But still, I want to be able to answer the question.
Sure.
But I want to do it in a faithful way. What about the Crusades?
Well, you know, the Crusades, first of all, we have to say all war is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
All war is ugly. And so if there is a war, it doesn't matter whether it's justified or unjustified from any perspective, there's always going to be awful stuff in war. It's war,
right,
for heaven's sakes.
Right.
So that's the first thing that we have to acknowledge. But the second thing that we have to acknowledge is that the entire Middle East was at one time Christian.
Mm.
Lots of Christian churches, lots of Christian institutions governed by a Christian worldview, and the Middle East was conquered. Conquered at the edge of the sword, conquered unwillingly, held captive for centuries, while the Christians of the Middle East, all throughout the whole of the Eastern Mediterranean, cried out to the Byzantines and to the Western Christians, please come help us. There were cries of the torment, the desecration of churches, the forcible conversion of masses of the population, genocide. I mean, some of the stories are absolutely horrific of the things that were done. And we don't have to imagine these things. All we have to do is turn on the news and look at what's going on right now in Syria, or what's going on right now in Somalia, or what's going on in central Nigeria. Mm. It's the same thing. It always has been. So that's the story of the Middle East. At long last, following a whole series of desperate cries, the Byzantines and the Western Christians were able to unite around a plan. That's when the First Crusade was launched. It was a plan to go and liberate the captive nations of the Middle East that were literally being held at knife point by a tiny minority that had come out of the Arabian Peninsula.
Now, I want to talk about that when we come back and expatiate on that point, because that's odd. That's weird coming from someone who's raised in our culture that hears the word crusade and sees it as the evil Christians.
We'll be right back.
Apologyradio.com, guys, with Joy the Girl, Luke the Bear. I'm going to say it.
And just Jeff.
No. Man, you got a smoker's cough going on over there?
I know, man. I've had the flu all week. My family's been taken down. I mean, I was in bed. My wife usually can get sick, and she's still plugging away. She's like, be quiet. Be a man. Get up. And, you know, she's just go. She still wants to do her thing. Down and out for the count from like Saturday to Monday morning, sleeping. She is out.
That's how you know with some people. Like with Bella, the little girl I work with.
Yeah.
When she's just can't even, That's how you know.
Yeah.
She can't even move, won't even get off the that's how you know that it's real.
Yeah, I told
her,
I was like Thursday, I was like, I think I might go to the hospital. What do you think Candace's response was? She's like, whatever, Mr. Sniffles.
Sounds about right.
And when she got it and she was out, I was like, I was a little bit of vindication I felt. I was like, well, I'm sorry, but not. Kind of. No, I was like, it was bad. I was just overwrecked.
I read this article that, and I mean, you know, this show's all about like authenticity of information and stuff.
Right.
So I'm not totally sure how true this is, but supposedly there was some sort of controlled study done that showed that men actually do experience like sick pain differently than women. So that's why they tend to be a little more whiny.
Well, you don't need to investigate any further. It's true. It's on my authority.
I looked to make sure. This is how I
now, hold on. I don't agree with this here.
This is the only.
I agree on his behalf.
That's why I said tend to, okay. Because I know it's not fair to blanket statement that. But also,
are you calling me a baby?
That article was written by a woman.
That was a swipe.
I made sure to check if it was written by a man. I was like, this is not.
It took me a second to absorb that, Luke. Yeah. It was a whole swipe at me. Yeah. I was like, at first, you agree with
me. I think we already established at the beginning of the show that you can be a little bit of a little girl sometimes. And by the way, you sound like you work on Pawn Stars.
All right.
Pawn Stars.
All right. All right, back, guys. Hey, I want to once again send you guys over to Kingsmeadow.com, the Kings Meadow Study Center with Dr. George Grant. Dr. Grant, as you can see, we get a little crazy on this show. We wanted to have you continue the thought on the issue of the Crusades, because that was one of the things that my son Sage, I mean, Dr. Grant, he came barreling out of his room one day, and he goes, Dad, I was like, what? He's like, sit down. He's like, you got to hear this. He's like, I remember when I was in school, and he's like, I was just up to third grade. He said, we talked about the Crusades, and all they said was like, the Christians were evil, they were slaughtering people for no reason, and that's what I'm getting at, Dr. Grant, is the issue of like, the why. What was going on in the background? Can you continue that thought on the Crusades? I think it'd be really helpful for us to sort of get some instruction here.
Yeah, you know, the whole of the Eastern Mediterranean was the heartland of the early church. I mean, the reason that we have things like the Vulgate, from which virtually all modern translations come from, was that there was a strong Christian community in Bethlehem. And that's where Jerome did his translating. Mm. There were, you know, great Christian leaders. Everyone from Augustine and Athanasius to Basil of Caesarea and Gregory Nazianzus, they're all in what today is the Middle East and North Africa. North Africa was the heart of Christian civilization. Mm. The Western vision for civilization that we call the Christian worldview, or the worldview that animated Christendom during the medieval age, that came from North Africa. So when Islamic armies swept out of the Arabian Peninsula with the vision of literally conquering the world in order to bring about the end of the world, there was this, you know, this outcry. The Byzantines, who had an unbroken line of civilization and had dominated that region, had become extremely weak. The East and the Western churches were not in full communication for lots of reasons, not the least of which were these Islamic invasions. And so there was a lot of disorganization for a number of years. But finally, after the Byzantines and the Western Christians were able to unite themselves around a common vision, they came, and the purpose was a rescue operation. Mm. It was like going and trying to liberate Kuwait from Saddam Hussein. And their purpose was to restore all of the churches and all of the communities that were then being held captive.
A restoration project. We'll be right back.
Right back. Where's my flashing sword? And my hand takes hold of the judgment.
I will take vengeance upon mine enemies. And I will repay those who hate me. O Lord, raise me to thy right hand and count me among thy saints. And I shall count thee among my favored sheep. And you shall have the protection of all the angels in heaven.
KPXQ, Faith Talk. Phoenix, Arizona, guys. If you want to move out, and you're thinking about it, this is the time of year to come, right now. Mm-hmm. Don't come in July or August.
I'm wearing shorts and flip-flops.
Don't come in July or August. Most of the country's under 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we got 2 feet in slippers.
2 feet in what?
I don't even understand what that statement.
I'm just trying to make people jealous. It's awesome. Last night I was like, I had to go to the store with us. I'm just like 9 o'clock at night and I'm just like a t-shirt and it felt so good. It was one of those moments you stop and you're like, just, it was a praise moment. Like it was a worship God moment. I was like, seriously, stopped and I was like, breathed in. I was like, thank you, God.
When I've been going hiking, there's like yellow and purple flowers all over the place.
Yeah.
It's like beautiful and sunshiny, and then the trail that I take is like kind of follows along the top of a mountain, and so the breeze just like shoots up it, and I'm just like,
oh, I had a
awesome
milkshake
glory
last night.
Glory.
This is awesome.
Glory.
A milkshake.
There you go. That says it all right there. I had a milkshake. Well, people on the East Coast are now making snow cream.
Yeah, or at least in Kentucky.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's technically the East Coast.
Yeah. not quite.
It's east from us.
Yes.
Yeah. So
everything
you
east
know
is East Coast from us. All right. Back with Dr. Grant. Dr. Grant, you describe a rescue operation, which sounds altogether different from the perspective that most of us have. I'd love for you to sort of just finish that thought. Help us with that, and we'll go some other places.
Well, and again, it's a rescue operation, but it is war.
Yes.
And so there is no denying that there were people that had bad motives when they go to war. There's no denying that there were all kinds of things that we would be horrified in if we knew about them. But the bottom line is that the commanders, the people who organized the Crusades, the initial operations, they were designed to rescue captive peoples held against their will by brutal barbarians from the Arabian Peninsula. That's why the Crusades started. Now, there were multiple waves of Crusades, some of them popular Crusades, the People's Crusade, various kings and princes. There were new kingdoms that were established. In fact, part of the reason that Lebanon is such a peculiar island in the midst of the Eastern Mediterranean with still a very, very strong Christian population is that it's the remnants of an old Crusader kingdom. Mm. So it's a mixed bag. The period of the Crusades lasts several hundred years, so you can't paint it with a single broad brush. But unfortunately, that's what modern, politically correct historians do. They paint it with this broad brush. They act as if it's all one thing, and they ignore the whole reason that the Crusades occurred in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's important to point out is obviously acknowledging the destruction and misery and ugliness of war. But it's to say that, look, there's more going on behind this. And you mentioned something that I find to be very helpful, Dr. Grant. You even mentioned the term Christendom. Okay,
yes.
Now I want to talk about that. Where we're coming from in this show is we're Reformed, we're post-millennial, we believe in a victorious, conquering kingdom across the world. We believe the gospel is going to transform all cultures. That's just where we're coming from. We have the hope of the gospel in that way. We're just trusting God for that. And so when you mentioned the term Christendom to a modern Christian ear that maybe is influenced by dispensationalism and the idea of sort of a failure in history in a sense. So you mentioned the idea of Christendom in history and Christians that had this idea of Christendom, and it sounds odd to our ears today. But can you talk to us about that? Talk to us about like the perspective of the Christians in history and the whole idea of Christendom anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, part of it is we are so larded with modern ideas. It's very difficult for us to even think about this in an uncluttered way. For instance, the whole idea of nations and nationhood is a modern idea that came out of the Enlightenment. Previously, people would talk about their associations, not in terms of their government, and not even necessarily in terms of their lords, their kings and their princes. They talked about their associations in terms of their rootedness in a community and their connectedness with a worldview, a set of ideas, a faith, a belief. And so in the period from the patristics, so we're talking about the beginning of the medieval age, say around 500 A.D., going all the way up literally to the modern age, that there's not this idea that there are these separate nations. You know, we forget that there was no such thing as a place called Germany until the age of Bismarck in the 19th century. Huh. Italy was not united as a nation until the 19th century. Mm. There were civil wars fought by Garibaldi to unite all of the very disparate kingdoms, principalities, city-states, republics that used to be the Italian peninsula. Same thing with Spain. Spain did not exist as a united single nation until the 1930s under Francisco Franco. Christopher Columbus did not sail for Spain. There was King Ferdinand, who was the king of Aragon, and Queen Isabella, who was the queen of Castile. They were married, as oftentimes occurred in these feudal marriages, but they had separate kingdoms with separate coinage and separate languages. Mm. And so when Christopher Columbus sailed, he sailed under the patronage of both the Kingdom of Aragon and the Kingdom of Castile, and that did not include all of what is today modern Spain. You know, it ignores Navarre and Andorra and Leon and all of the other kingdoms that were there. Huh. France, all the way up through the Hundred Years' War in the 14th century, was literally a 100-mile circle around Paris called the Île-de-France. The other kingdoms that make up what is today the modern nation of France, cobbled together during the French Revolution, were Aquitaine and Normandy and Brittany and Provence and Burgundy. They were all separate. I give that sort of unfamiliar perspective of the world to remind us that what united people in the West was their faith, and they were connected to geography and to local communities. So they saw themselves as this large family, connected by their faith in Christ and their unity in the church. And they literally talk far more about Christendom. The word nation is a modern word. It doesn't even emerge until the 17th century.
Wow.
Interesting. And so, okay, one of the things that you help us with, I think, in your lectures is you talk a lot about Christendom and the idea of Christians understanding the kingdom of God. They had a long-term vision and perspective of legacy. And in one of the ways you actually take aim at that is you even talk about the issue of buildings, like when they would actually build a building and a church. And he talked to us about that because I think that that's very helpful. And it seemed to be, you know, again, I can picture again Sage just busting out of his door, like with new information for me. Dad. One of the things he talked about was just and it's obviously something I share with him, the kingdom of God and Christ ruling and reigning, putting his enemies under his feet and the expansion of the kingdom through the proclamation of the gospel. I mean, this is what we talk about at church and in my house. But one of the things that he zeroed in on was just that point you are making about the issue of Christians like building churches over generations. they saw it as legacy building. They saw Christendom as something that was expanding, getting bigger. And look, we're supposed to like leave a legacy for this, and it even it was demonstrated in how they built things.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is striking to people who go and visit cathedrals in Europe today is they think to themselves, why, you know, it's kind of a hodgepodge. You got some Baroque over here, some Rococo over here, and then you'll see, oh, well, here's a Norman arch, and here's this mosaic floor, and it dates back to the 8th century, to an earlier chapel, and you think, wow, it's just kind of a this mosaic of you know, across the ages. It's odd.
Yeah.
The truth is that the people of the community saw their worship, their life together, as a part of this ongoing work of covenantal succession that goes way, way back to the past and way, way forward to the works that the Lord will do in days to come. And they wanted their buildings, even the place where they worshiped, to reflect that. Oftentimes, the best of the cathedrals were not built by some professional architect. They were built by the people themselves in the town across many generations, knowing that as they undertook the task of building, they would never see it completed. Their children might never see it completed. Their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, it was intentional. They believed that the rocks and stones needed to cry out the lordship of Christ to the succeeding generations, and they were making an investment in a civilization. They were laying up an inheritance. And so, for instance, in Vienna, if you go into the Stephansdom Platz and you stand there, there's this incredible medieval cathedral, St. Stephen's. The columns don't match the towers don't match. The roof has weird angles because it was built over 800 years.
Wow.
And it was built by the people of Vienna after they finished a long day of labor at, say, you know, their cobbler shop or at their bakery or at their butcher shop. They'd lay down their tools, they'd make their way to the center of town, and they'd go to work, and they'd work several hours. And they do that their entire lives, and their children would do it, and their grandchildren would do it, and their great-grandchildren would do it, because that's what Christian communities do. They put themselves into the task of transforming culture bit by bit, slowly, by reformation, not by revolution, so that the ages to come might have laid up for them the treasures of an inheritance of inestimable value. And that's the thing that I try and teach my students. They're the heirs of this incredible wealth of art and music and literature and ideas, and that is laid up for them so that they can then lay up an even greater inheritance for their children and their grandchildren for however long the Lord tarries.
Amazing. And to think, just to really, I don't know, just to sit and just bask in that thought, I think it demonstrates the inevitable outcome and fruit of a proper view of the gospel of the kingdom and the transformation of the world and history. Because we talk all the time on this show about Christ bringing the kingdom, being the king, seated and reigning, putting his enemies under his feet, everything in subjection to him. And we talk about, like, it's right there in the text. Look, it's victorious. God warns the kings, obey the Son or you'll perish. Jesus asking the Father for the nations. Father says, I'll give you the nations. And you know that Jesus asked for them because he said, go get them. But you listening to Dr. Grant and looking in history and seeing Christians that essentially saw that perspective and the fruit of that labor. We're going to talk more about it right here, apologiaradio.com with Dr. George Grant, Kings Meadow Study Center. Get him.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know? actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, the ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward. Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free, how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
Now, we must all fear evil men. But there is another kind of evil which we must fear most. And that is the indifference of good men.
ApologiaRadio.com, guys. You can partner with us in prayer, in giving financially to help this ministry bring the gospel into the culture and around the world. And you can partner with us by getting an episode, snatching it off of ApologiaRadio.com, putting it up on your Twitter, on your Facebook, Google+, Instagram, wherever. Put it out. Last week, on Sunday, checked it out, the stats on Apologia Radio just on Facebook. And Apologia Radio was being talked about by 1,500 people.
Wow.
On Sunday.
Awesome.
Those were the stats. So,
glory.
Those are the sorts of things that help us. And if we could talk about the impact of it, I'd love to sit in front of you one day and you get to see just the email after email after email after email after email, and then even phone call after phone call of people saying, look, my whole worldview has been changed. The way I approach apologetics, the gospel itself, even. And many times, eschatology. Luke, I didn't tell you this. At church on Sunday, a young man named Matthew, huge fan of the show, came to visit the church.
Oh, cool.
Says he's been listening. He listens every single week, he said.
Really?
And he just came up to me. He's like, I got to tell you, like, you have no idea. Like, you have totally been a part of, like, God changing my whole view of eschatology, my view of the future. I was like, praise God. He's like, you don't understand. Thank you so much. You blessed me. I was like, no, you don't understand. You blessed me.
Hand claps for Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. Glory. So, I mean, these are the sorts of things. That's right. These are the Joy, did you know? Have you seen it yet? You don't know?
No.
Okay. Ah, dang it. Joy.
I wonder if Dr. Grant's seen The Apostle.
We're going to lock her up one day, tie her to a chair, and she's going to sit and watch The Apostle.
Last night at ICON, which is Apologia's youth group.
Yeah.
You have definitely indoctrinated the youth of our church because
my smoker's house.
Because the whole Isaac finished his little talk, you know, and then Seth goes, "Can
little.
I get a hand clap for Jesus or something like that?"
Is there a Holy Ghost explosion?
And then ridiculous. Everybody started clapping. Well, actually, Seth and Sage started clapping.
Yeah, right.
And everyone else was confused.
Yes, they don't even know.
Because they don't know what that stupid movie is.
It's The Apostle. Do you know The Apostle, Joy? All right, we're back, guys. Dr. George Grant. I'm like, we took a little break as we went into the commercial there. Just, I'm in the hallway just buzzing about how excited I am. Maybe I'm just a nerd, but I could sit like with Dr. Grant for hours at a coffee shop.
It's probably both.
Yeah. Dr. Grant, if you ever come to Phoenix, coffee shop, you and me.
We'll do it.
Okay.
We'll do it.
All right. So, Dr. Grant, we've been talking about Christendom, and I have a ton of other questions for you. But Joy, speaking about historical issues of Christians and Christian thought, she had something she brought up as we took a break there that I thought it'd be good to ask you, because I saw it come up a few times this week across social media and things like that, just questions and Christians believing in flat earth kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Help, Joy, go ahead and ask the question.
Well, I feel like it's a pretty common argument that people, you know, you're kind of giving your evidences or whatever you may be doing. You're in a discussion and someone just says, well, Christians were just a bunch of idiots. Like, that's historical fact, is that Christians were just stupid all throughout history. They believed the earth was flat, all this stuff. Was that true? Is that true? Were we idiots?
Well, virtually everything that we have in the way of the advancement of Western civilization all the way up to the last century has come at the hands of Christians. Mm. It's the Christian worldview that says we actually have an orderly universe that can be examined, and because God is orderly and creates these patterns, these things can be studied. We can make predictions and do science. Truth is, the scientific method is really not even conceivable apart from the Christian worldview.
That's right.
You know, the notion that phenomena can be repeatable and can be tested again and again, and that the same experiments can yield the same results again and again and again, that emerges out of the notion that there is an orderly creation at the hands of a purposeful and sovereign and providential God. It's rooted in the idea that there are even decrees of God. So, you know, that unfortunately is the kind of propaganda that our kids are getting in this sort of postmodern world that we live in. But it's also a house of cards that will collapse under the weight of its own absurdity.
Yes.
This is not the kind of nonsense that can endure long. And so we just have to continue to do our work, continue to speak the truth in love, continue to lay before the people of the world the notions that are true. You know, the skepticism that exists in the modern world about virtually everything, even unexamined skepticism, is undermining the whole worldview that the postmoderns have created. It's not sustainable. So our worst enemy is not the nonsense that is constantly portrayed in the corridors of power. Our worst enemy is our own complacency, our own laziness, and our own unwillingness to stand forth with courage and speak the truth.
Wow.
No, Dr. Grant, you should be a co-host on this show, because this is the conversation we're always in. Dr. Grant, one of the things that we're always speaking about, in particular recently doing a lot of episodes on apologetics and foundations, I mean, that's what we've been going at, Dr. Grant. We've been saying, look, it's the Christian worldview that gave rise to science. Atheism doesn't give rise to science. There is no justification for induction, for the uniformity in nature, the future being like the past. It's Christianity that birthed the idea, the ideas that we have today. It's been the blessing upon the world, what the biblical worldview had to offer. And so, and one of the things that we've been talking about, my contention is, Dr. Grant, this new atheism and all the secular thought and everything else, that's my contention, is that it's in its death throes. It cannot stand the test of time, and it will not make its way through history.
Absolutely. You know, A.N. Wilson is a wonderful writer of the English tradition. 20 years ago, he had a conversion experience out of Christianity into radical atheism. And he became a buddy with Christopher Hitchens and Dawson and all of the others, and was as ardent as anyone. But being a careful historian, he kept running into difficulties, and he finally realized that he was skeptical by nature. He had always been a skeptic. Hmm. It was a part of what had created his curiosity and his literary penchant. But the one thing that he had always failed to do was to have skepticism about his skepticism.
Huh.
The result was that he was working on a novel about Adolf Hitler. And as he was doing all of the historical research, he realized, oh my goodness, Hitler believes everything that every major political and cultural leader today believes.
Hmm.
He's identical, and you know, he's got the same liberal ideas. He was anti-gun control. He was concerned about the environment to a kind of religious degree. He was a vegetarian. He had rejected ordinary marriage. All of these things, and it all of a sudden hit A.N. Wilson. Oh my gosh. I've adopted Hitler's worldview. Is that what I really believe?
Wow.
Atheism really has nowhere to go. It's constantly backed up against the reality that the vision that is held is not one that can sustain the kind of art and music and literature and ideas that we've all taken for granted. They want the fruit, but they don't want the root, and as a result, they will wind up with a barren orchard.
That's right.
That's good.
That's right. Exactly. And, you know, I obviously atheists don't like me to hear. We have lots of atheist fans of our show, believe it or not. But it is just a truth. It's the biblical worldview that gave rise to where we're at today in technology and medicine and everything else. And again, like Dr. Grant says, today people say, well, then what? How come, you know, all of the famous people are the atheists, the scientists and all those different, they're not believers. Well, because they're trying to enjoy the fruit without the root. And eventually it will die. It'll wither away and go away. When you don't have a worldview that can make sense of beauty, when you don't have a worldview that can make sense of poetry, when you don't have a worldview that can justify universal, unchanging, invariant, necessary laws, you don't produce the things that we have today. It doesn't grow. It doesn't continue. I made a comment last week that atheists are the gadflies on civilization. They're the barnacles on the ship of the Christian worldview. And their position is being exposed more and more. And I like what Dr. Grant says. Our problem is not with what their claims are. Our problem isn't their challenges. Our problem is ultimately our indifference. Our problem is us not in the fight and getting to work building with the gospel for the kingdom of God in history. Dr. Grant, interesting that the point you have a video online, and I forget what it's called. It's on YouTube. And it was what struck me as like, man, this is good. It just got me inspired to learn. And it was a video. I'd love for you to talk about it when we come back from the break. And it was just about how you got to where you're at today in the sense of you thought you knew history. And then you discovered, I don't know anything about history. I've been gypped. I've been robbed. And it was on the issue of American presidents, I believe it was. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
And so I'd love for you to just share a snippet of that with us and then help us sort of to understand where we go from there in the sense of American history and things like that. Because it was what hit me hard. I was like, man, look, if I don't know that, then what is it that I do know about history? And should I be trying harder to really learn? And you just really inspired me, not just my son and my family, but you've inspired me to really dig in and research and to know more and to understand. And so I'm going to talk about that when we come back. Dr. Grant's video on YouTube, it's about U.S. presidents. But as we go into the break, I want to encourage you guys, head over to our major sponsor, the American Vision, AmericanVision.com and AmericanVision.org. Go get some materials, get some supplies. We're talking about worldview. And American Vision has a lot of videos, things like that. Yeah. Dr. Grant is actually on a lot of the videos, I believe. If I have a couple of those, Dr. Grant is on. I want to encourage you guys to head over to the American Vision, pick up some resources. Many of you guys have done so in the last 6 months, and you just sort of reported back, man, how blessed you are. Go to AmericanVision.com, pick up some resources, go to their stuff on worldview. They have excellent DVD series on the very topics that we're talking about the biblical worldview. AmericanVision.com. Also, hit us up at ApologiaRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Just lost it there for a second.
Hit us.
So break my step.
Welcome back, ApologiaRadio.com. What?
That song, it sounds like she was getting bleeped out.
Yeah. Does nobody else hear that?
She's saying, I will wait for you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I will wait for you. It's Mumford and Sons. It's Mumford and Sons. Dubstep.
Hey, I got a question for you.
All right.
Do you think that only a biblical worldview can account for someplace, say, like Fogo de Chão?
You mean where we ate with Gary DeMar?
With Uncle Gary, yeah.
With Uncle Gary. Yeah. Fogo de Chão?
Yeah, because
meat on a stick. It was delicious.
Dr. Grant mentioned that these no good atheists like
that Hitler was,
like
a,
Hitler
vegetarian.
Was a vegetarian.
So that automatically means that everyone who's a vegetarian is Hitler. That's some great reason.
I'm just wondering
right
if
there.
That's how we can account for a place like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I got it. I think
we can account for a place like Eden with vegetarianism.
All I can say is God is good. At Fogo de Chao. I'm just like, all I think is how good you are, God.
All
you
this
are
so in Christ, good, too,
yeah,
when you're there?
Worship.
No, hold on.
Worship happens for me at Meat Fest 2013.
Joe and I just had a discussion. I have a theory that before the fall, the animals were like regenerate, like gummy bear animals, where you could like just go take a bite out of them. And it would grow back, and you didn't have to kill him, but you could still eat meat.
You're ridiculous.
So Jerry would fit right in there.
Absolutely.
Eating chunks of raw meat.
You're ridiculous. Dr. Grant, I apologize. You had to sort of witness that moment there.
That's okay.
All right. Dr. Grant, hey, the interesting thing that really plugged me into your work was the discussion you had about, you said, I don't know anything about history, and it was after... You've got this education. It was after you studied. What was that? Could you give us sort of a snapshot of what that was?
Well, I had a great education, and I did not major in history. I majored in political science, but I had a tremendous amount of history. It was a minor. And then I went on to get a master's degree and was working on one of my doctorates. When I began to realize how little I actually knew because of what I had been taught, both in high school and at the university. And it really was a revelation as I began serious reading, not just of the Founding Fathers, but of the people that the Founding Fathers read.
Okay.
And I began to collect books, history books, from prior to the war between the states, and started to do this sort of intensive research in preparation for a couple of projects that I was working on, and it just it suddenly hit me that there was this whole episode in American history that most Americans know absolutely nothing about, and while I had a few inklings about it, I didn't even have all of the details in place. And that's simply the period of the American War for Independence. We all have been taught that George Washington was the first president of the United States. Ask anybody anywhere, and they will tell you that is a fact. Here's the trouble. George Washington became president in 1789. The United States had a self-functioning government from the beginning of the First Continental Congress in 1774. It had a constitution prior to our current constitution. That was written in 1781. It was put into a functional sort of usage in 1783, and it was finally passed in 1787. All during that time, from 1774 all the way through to the adoption of our current Constitution, there was a chief executive of the United States called President. He was the President of Congress assembled in the First Continental Congress. He became the President of the United States following the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which was signed by the third president of the United States. In fact, it's why his signature is so big and front and center, because he was the first one to sign it, John Hancock. There were presidents that went all the way through the war. In fact, when George Washington resigned his commission, he presented his sword and resigned his post and returned like Cincinnatus back to Mount Vernon, declaring, "Mr. President, I have served my country, and now I yield my commission to you." And he said that to Samuel Huntington, President of the United States, years before the Constitution was even a glimmer in Alexander Hamilton's eye. So you know, what I realized was there were 16 presidential administrations prior to George Washington. These are the men who risked everything, their lives, their fortunes, their livelihoods, to stand against the greatest mercantilist power and military power that the world had ever known. And they fought a war. They funded a war. They maintained a governmental system. They brought forth two sets of constitutional structures, and in the end established this remarkable experiment in liberty, and we don't even know their names.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Grant, you said something. You said the war for independence. Now, those are carefully chosen words. Because, right? Because
today, yeah, they are.
In our culture today, we know it as the Revolutionary War. But you chose those words carefully, the war for independence. And I think this is what I want to aim at here. When you choose those words carefully, it's because of the worldview foundations that were behind that conflict. Rather than Absolutely. Calling it simply a revolutionary war, you chose those words carefully. The war for independence, because there was something else going on in the minds and the hearts of the people who were involved in that conflict. It wasn't to them a revolution, a war for independence. We're going to go into commercial about 2 minutes here, but can you start us on that thought?
Well, a revolution is the antithesis of the sort of reforming work, restoring work that the founding fathers had in mind. Hmm. And a revolution is what happened in France. A revolution is what happened in Russia. It is violent. It calls for instantaneous change. Reformation is content to rely on the old ways and to bring the constant transformation of the gospel to every institution in life. The radical difference between reformation and revolution was very much at the forefront of the thinking of the founding fathers. It's why they set up a covenantal structure in their constitutions. It's why we have this great experiment in liberty, however diminished it is today.
Now, that's what I want to really begin to unpack, because I think it would be so helpful and relevant for right now. You know, even just the thought that we just had there, the difference between calling something the American Revolutionary War and the War for Independence. Huge difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Massive, massive difference. And to understand all of that and what went on behind that, the implications that we draw out from there, in a time today where kids are being taught that the founding fathers were essentially terrorists, revolutionaries.
Right.
We'll be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
Be right back.
Like a bullet train. Moving like the speed of sound. Feet can keep on the ground.
I want
can't stay
very much for you guys, fans of the show. Go to kingsmeadow.com. I make a lot of recommendations. I want to let you know that they're very thought out, not just random. KingsMeadow.com is something that will help us and help our children develop a biblical worldview, intellectually rigorous thoughts. And I think that what our kids are going to learn and what we're going to learn from Dr. Grant is going to help us bring reformation and transformation. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. Okay, so Dr. Grant, short segment, and then I know we got to let you go here, but can you just sort of give us a last punch on the issues behind the war for independence, the Christian worldview, the thought that went behind that, and we'll kind of leave it there.
Sure. The founding fathers believed that the parliament and the king back at Westminster had transformed the English system of law and had created a mercantilist system. Basically, it was where the government and big business, the big banks and the too big to fail commercial operations, had combined their efforts to control and direct the economy. That's called mercantilism. During World War II, we called it fascism.
Wait, are you talking about today's government, or are you something in 1776?
I'm talking about Parliament and the mercantilist system that was put into place that became, for the American colonies, a breach of their freedom. They believed that a revolution had occurred in Westminster, that in fact the British government had abandoned English common law, that the principles of freedom that had always animated the whole English common law system since the time of the Glorious Revolution of William and Mary, they believed that it was gone. So what they did was they wrote a covenant lawsuit sequence. We call it the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, you'll see that it is very much modeled on the covenant lawsuit sequences of the Old Testament.
That's right.
Particularly the Minor Prophets.
That's right.
And they essentially said, you've violated covenant. You have abandoned. You've created a revolution. Our purpose is to restore it.
Mm. Right.
And therefore, they were not the revolutionaries. They believed that the wickedness of this mercantilist system, which was strangling small business owners and local craftsmen and families, the small guy, for the purposes of ideology and the too big to fail banks and commercial combines, and they simply would not stand for it. And so what they did was, instead of creating a revolutionary structure, they took the lower magistrates, the local magistrates. They interposed those local magistrates between the people who are helpless and these upper magistrates who are violating biblical standards. That's what the American War for Independence was. Mm. That's what it was about.
And it's amazing is that you think through the thought, even what Dr. Grant brings up there, guys, is the covenantal lawsuit structure that's behind the thinking and the documentation. I mean, the people who are on these committees, these are like Bible college and seminary graduates.
Right.
So as they write these things up, that's what they're thinking in their minds behind it. So far from being a secular democracy, there was something different going behind. It's more of a Christian republic.
Mm. And the, Very much so.
Yeah. And the lesser magistrates, the whole issue there. I mean, that was something given to us from Calvin and Geneva and highlighted from there. People don't understand that that's where we come from, and the liberty and the gifts and the freedom that we have today is a gift to the world from the Christian worldview.
It's even the language itself. We so haphazardly use the word federal and federalism, but the word federal is just a synonym for covenant. The idea of federalism comes out of Puritan theology.
Yes.
You read Thomas Boston or the other federal theology guys, they're talking about covenant. And so when the founding fathers created this sort of Presbyterian-like structure where there's checks and balances and division of responsibilities and labors, and you have these checks on the exercise of powers, all of that is drawn directly out of a biblical worldview.
Amen.
So when you strip away the biblical structure as we have in the modern world, it means that this freedom of ours is not only at jeopardy, we have virtually lost it.
ApologiaRadio.com. Dr. Grant, thank you so much.
Right back.
Why we've been so excited about having Dr. George Grant from the Kings Meadow Study Center on, right?
Yes.
I mean, they know, we've seriously, I don't know how many times we've scheduled to have him on and something has come up. Either way, scheduling conflict, confusion about time. And we just like, we don't care. Let's make it happen. Let's get him on. And so we've been looking forward to this for a long time. Okay, so let me just offer to you my highest recommendation to go to kingsmeadow.com. A lot of you guys know we've given recommendations before. You guys gotten this stuff. It's really blessed you. Let me tell you how important I think this is. I believe that it's possible for us to recover what we've lost in America. I believe that. It's going to be through the gospel, heart change. It's not going to be top-down change. It's from the bottom. It's going to start somewhere. It's going to start with us proclaiming the gospel to the culture around us. It's going to have to be in a bold way, in a confident way, in a way that is saturated with grace and humility, but comes at the culture. But it's going to really come, if you think about it, from us and our children. And we've got to start. We've got to start. Let me just go ahead and say bold it. We've got to start getting married. We've got to start having lots of kids. We've got to start raising these kids up in the Lord. We've got to start adopting the kids the culture doesn't want. We've got to move together as a community, a church across America to do that. Okay, and one of the things I think we can do to help our kids is get Dr. Grant's curriculum. I mean that. They'll help us. Okay, so a couple recommendations. He has Antiquity, a whole series on Antiquity, a whole series on Christendom. He has a whole series on American culture. He has a whole series on modernity. You may be asking questions like...
What?
Modernity.
Joel McDernity?
Modernity.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
Modernity. Modern times. Modernity.
Gotcha.
Okay, so here's... Like, some of you guys are thinking, they're like, curriculum. Well, okay, let me just recommend this. My kids, through their high school years in homeschooling, aren't going to miss Dr. Grant's curriculum. They're going to run through the whole cycle. You've got those four, and you really can do it high age, middle school. Guys, get the curriculum. Okay, it's a little pricey, just so you know, and that's because it's worth it. And if you say, I don't know if I can afford that, go for something cheaper. Don't go for something cheaper. Sell your shoes, okay? Sell your shirt. Sell something to get the curriculum. It's that big. It's that important. Can I recommend it highly enough? I mean, that's it. Sell something to get the curriculum.
Just not your soul.
No. Do what you can to save money up to get the curriculum and buy it for your family. Buy it for your current children. Buy it for your grandchildren. Yes, it's that important. Okay? You got a little sampling of Dr. Grant's, but there is much, much more. Or he's a blessing. He's a gift. I believe that. And I believe that you will benefit greatly yourself and your children by getting the curriculum from Dr. Grant. All right, guys, talk amongst yourselves.
I think that I loved today.
Yeah.
It was super encouraging because I think that a lot of times the idea of dominion, we just don't really get it because we grew up in a, our currently bad eschatology kind of reigns supreme, where we don't have that idea. So it wasn't an idea that I was ever brought up with. So it's kind of an interesting concept, and it almost seems like, well, how are we going to do this? This is like this big new idea. But think about it. It's totally like today proves that it's not this new idea. In fact, most of the art, ideas, science that we see today came from this idea of Christians having dominion. So if you feel discouraged, just think about that. Yeah. Like, just think about the fact that, you know, across the ocean, there are buildings that represent, I mean, what did he say? How many years?
800 years.
800 years of dominion in Christian communities.
On a building.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, just think about, it's awesome. We totally have dominion. It's not this new thing that we're just coming up with because we're super edgy and cool.
Yeah.
It's this thing that's been around for a really long time, and in fact, it is biblical.
Yeah, and we've lost it.
Yeah,
over the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a strange thought to the Puritans. It wasn't a strange thought to Christians hundreds of years ago. Strange to us now because we've been inundated and ready. I'm going to use it. Larded.
I'm using it.
I love that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said larded. I was like, what
Ooh.
Is that?
How does he know what I eat?
Oh my gosh.
We larded with the idea of we lose, right? Defeated church and all those things. And I really meant that. I mean, you know, we talk about, look, the scriptures are this there on this. The kingdom of God comes in history. It expands across the world. you're not really arguing with us. You're arguing with, I'm going to show you chapter and verse. Kingdom of God, expansion in history, victory over the nations. That's what it says. Okay. And we will have the debate with you. Okay. But the issue of like, okay, let's look back and look at what did it bring. And we're not saying like it was a utopia. Like in history, Christian, it was a utopia mm-hmm. one time we've lost. No, it's just like
everyone just built buildings and
right.
had children and
it
made
was
art.
Awesome and beautiful. No, we had a long way to go.
Yeah.
But the root was there and it produced the fruit. Okay. And our culture is trying to cut off the root of what blessed this country. Mm-hmm. But so are Christians, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
When we say that it's not about leaving a legacy for the gospel, we're not in this for the long run. We have sores on our behinds from sitting down, doing nothing, waiting mm-hmm. just for the rapture to happen or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so let's get back. Let's get back to the gospel, the kingdom that's about our own salvation, but also the salvation of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that will have with it fruit, great fruit that will bless the whole world around us.
Grapefruit.
Grape, you know, it reminds me of this cereal, like grape nuts.
Oh, that's like my favorite cereal
you
ever.
You like that?
Yes, it's
so
good.
So disgusting.
It's like dirt.
I like grape nuts.
It tastes like dirt.
Hold on, this is coming from a man that drinks something that looks like vomit every morning.
What do you drink?
My raw meal.
Yeah.
Oh, raw meal.
Talking about dirt.
It is. You drink it, you feel good.
No, we're not talking about how you feel.
You
we're talking
eat
about
foods that taste like dirt, you feel good.
It does
That's
taste like
true.
Nasty. I'm not going to lie. Raw meal is nasty. It tastes awful. Seriously. But I can't stop because it feels so good.
Joy, when you talk about having dominion, would that include dominion over meat?
Let's put it on the spot.
Yeah.
Joy!
Yes.
Bacon.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure.
I cook meat all the time.
You do cook
for other people.
For other people.
This is true.
And I.
She can cook bacon.
I try my very, very.
She cooks a mean strip of bacon.
Yeah.
I try my very best to.
Not eat it.
With my position of dominion, serve organic, grass-fed, all
bacon.
That stuff. Because I think that's good stewardship over our.
I'm in full agreement. I'm in full agreement with you.
You know, I've never seen organic grass-fed bacon. Have you?
Grass-fed.
Well, I don't think
they have
really
organic.
Eat grass.
They definitely have organic bacon, like nitrate-free and
yeah, but not grass-fed.
Not grass. I don't think pigs are all up in the grass. Like, I'll take that.
They don't eat grass.
Yeah.
I was just making a point.
Yeah. Speaking of points, do you have any points about puppies?
I do.
I'm wondering.
Good segue.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. No, there's a very serious, serious news.
What is it?
Clip that my cousin sent me. And if this is for people that don't live in Arizona, do you know?
We have
what
excellent
we're up
weather
yes,
here,
we do have
but we
weather.
Also have this.
We have this infestation.
Oh, no.
Am I good, J-Man? Am I good? Okay. We're good. Here we go.
A tiny dog is causing a big problem. In Arizona, Chihuahuas are running loose in a Phoenix neighborhood, lots of them. There are reports that a pack, as many as 15, chase kids as they walk to school. Being bitten is a big worry, but there is another. The canines are leaving a trail of, well, what dogs do, and no one wants to clean it up. Animal Control says they got 6,000 calls last year about the wild canines and need help catching them.
If at all possible, if you see a stray, if you can safely contain him in your yard and then
laundry
call
basket
us,
will work.
That makes a big difference. Because what's happening is people are calling and saying, hey, I see a stray. By the time we get there, it's long gone.
Animal Control offers two solutions. So this doesn't happen in your neighborhood, neuter your pet and keep them on a leash.
And third, carry a gun.
Okay, wait. There's one line in there that I think is crazy. I'm like, I can't decide which part of the statement is more shocking. He says there were over 6,000 calls. So that's crazy. A year ago?
Last year.
So that means this thing has been happening for a year.
It's been underneath our noses for a year.
That means that for a year, at least a year, Chihuahuas have been running this neighborhood.
They're like
making people pay protection on their houses and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's in Maryvale, I can't say it, but isn't it all that's out there is like a prison, right?
I don't know.
Anyways.
It's kind of a rough.
There's an article that goes with it, and they said that they get sometimes up to 12 calls at a time.
Of Chihuahuas running wild in the streets.
Yes.
This is amazing. Chicago's dealing with like shootings on the street corners. We're like, we have Chihuahuas running around everywhere.
This is where you take dominion.
Yeah. Over the Chihuahuas. Hey, yes. They're mean little creatures,
too.
I don't even care
what.
They will
bite you.
Yeah, people are like pit bulls. No, I'm more scared of the Chihuahua.
Well, and dude, I mean, if there's 15 Chihuahuas coming at you,
I can't
that's like a big dog.
Yeah.
They'll go after you.
That's how many teeth do you think that is?
Okay.
A lot of teeth.
And they're like needles, too.
They are mean little dogs. Okay, so I have a friend. His name is David. He's in a bunch of films. Most of you guys have probably seen him in films here or there. So I'm staying at his house in Hollywood, and he's in a bunch of stuff. It's really cool. But I'm staying at his house in Hollywood at one point, and he had his girlfriend's dog at his house, and it was a Chihuahua, and the thing was evil. I mean, just darkness. I think that was his name, the darkness. I walked in out. The dog would try to attack me the whole time. There wasn't a moment that went by where he didn't try to attack me. And he didn't. He sounded like he had like an asthma problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like he wasn't. He was just the darkness with
Chihuahua of
asthma.
Darkness.
He was.
Did he have a chainsaw as one of his arms?
He was speaking Latin.
Okay. It was a wretched little creature. And it would attack me. I had to literally throw my foot in its face, and it would just start attacking my boot. And he would just go to town. And he wasn't just trying to nibble at it. He was trying to bite through to my flesh. Evil dogs. I hate them. I hate Chihuahuas. You struck a nerve here. They're evil dogs. And I'll tell you what, I was sleeping at his house, and I woke up. Because I was sleeping with one eye open. I was sleeping with one eye open with this little dog around. And sure enough, with my one eye open, what did I see? This dog snuck out of his room to come attack me in the middle of the night. I woke up, he's coming right at me.
I used to live with three Chihuahuas. My mother-in-law has Chihuahuas.
And they never stop barking, am I right?
One of them's real bad. One of them is actually really, really sweet. He's really nice. He's got some funky looking teeth, but he's really
nice.
That's
a lie. There's no nice Chihuahua.
The other one, he can be really mean and barks a lot. Frankly.
What is it a breed of? Is it a breed of like a rat and a wolf?
Oh my gosh. I just moved. And yesterday there was an R.O.U.S. walking down the street. Do you know what an R.O.U.S. is?
No.
Princess Bride. You ever seen Princess Bride?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, you remember the R.O.U.S.?
Please don't insult me.
Rodents of unusual size.
Yeah. Then you should R-O-U-S. Know what an R.O.U.S. is.
From the fire swamp.
So this lady was walking one down the street. I'm not even playing. Elliot was there and saw it, and we just started laughing because it was R.O.U.S.
Awesome. R.O.U.S.
Those exist. People have them as pets.
It was just a shaggy dog, but it had a funky haircut and looked just like the rats from the movie. Welcome to Arizona.
Did you say hi?
I tried to go tackle it and throw it into the like fire bombs that were going off, but
tonight on Channel 10 News, killer chihuahuas in a neighborhood near you.
That was ABC News, by the way.
Arizona news reports are like, it's 115 degrees today, and a man was killed by a sea of chihuahuas.
Oh.
Guys, support apologyradio.com. Get us at apologyradio.com. Get us on our Facebook. Like us. Share us. Joy the Girl, Luke the Bear, and Jeff. The
Durbin.
Ninja.
Just Jeff.
The
Durbin.
Ninja. The Ninja.
Durbin.
We'll catch you guys next time right here for another episode of Apologia Radio, guys. Bless you guys.